Oh, there's the bell. All right. All right. So it was okay. In our study tonight, we are taking Jacob as he leaves Beersheba, as he leaves Isaac, his father, and his mother Rebekah, and as he leaves his brother Esau, which I'm sure was a relief to him to leave, as well as to his mom and dad. And so he sets out from Beersheba. You can see Beersheba up here at the bottom of the map. So Beersheba, and from Beersheba he goes up to a place called Luz, L-U-Z, which he renames Bethel. So he goes up there and he spends the night at that place. And he got a stone for his pillow. Now, a lot of people would immediately say, well, whoever heard having a stone for your pillow? Well, it's a lot better than laying on your side on the ground and having your head canted over on the ground and having a crick in your neck and everything else. And so, actually, it's not a bad idea. So, he slept there that night, and while he was sleeping, he saw a vision of a ladder. And God was standing up above the ladder, and angels were going up and down this ladder. And so God spoke to him, and he gave him the promises that he had given to Abraham. And when he had left, when Jacob had left home, Isaac had said, "May God give you the blessings of Abraham." So that, do you understand and do you remember that when Isaac gave him the blessing, that was not the three promises of Abraham? Do you all understand that? See, that was the birthright, that was the inheritance of Isaac's possessions. But only God could give the threefold promise to Abraham. And but as Isaac sent him away, he said, "May God do this. May God give you those blessings." So God appears there above the ladder, and he talks to him. He promises to Jacob. He says that he will give him the land that he promised to their fathers, and that his seed would be as the dust of the earth, and that in his seed all the nations would be blessed. Now remember, the land promise, we don't need to say any more about that. But which one of those second ones is what we're calling the nation promise? It's the second one, because that's the one that has to do with the multitude. So, you know, look for that idea of multitude. It is the multitude that signifies the nation. Now, in the third one, we call that the spiritual blessing promise. Carl, did you have something you were going to say? Well, I'm going to plan to finish this up about 8:15. Yeah.
Esau had been dad's favorite.
Yes.
Is there a verse in here that would indicate that Isaac had been warned by the Lord, told by the Lord? It's not going to be your plan, it's going to be my plan.
No, he had not. There had been nothing like that. See, until this thing happened, now the only thing was that when the two children were, before they had been born, God had said the older will serve the younger.
Right.
And so that would be the only indication so far that the younger one is going to be over the older one.
But Isaac wasn't privy to any details.
No more details than that. No. Well, the only thing is, see, Isaac believed that being a prophet, he would say what the Lord's will was, whether he knew what it was or not, so that when the Lord let him go ahead and give that blessing to Jacob, then it was his firm conviction that that was because the Lord wanted Jacob to have it, and that therefore it was not his to change. So that was his thinking about it. And so because he did go ahead and give the blessing to Jacob there, but see, the thing is, Jacob would not have had to go into that deception to get the blessing. See, Jacob thought he had to take a part in it and deceive his father to get the blessing, but he didn't have to take a hand in it. God would have figured out a way of his own to do that. But since Jacob did that, then God just used that as the way of fulfilling this. But no, Isaac had not known anything other than just the prophecy. That's right. That's right. And you know, one of the things to remember is that you can take the promises to Abraham or you can take the promises to David. Either one as an example. Whether those promises would be fulfilled did not depend upon their later descendants. What would depend upon it, as far as the later descendants, whether they really took part and enjoyed those blessings depended on their life and conduct. But whether the promise would ultimately be fulfilled did not at all depend on, you know, what the in-betweens were. Because like you say, Jacob and Esau were certainly not exemplary in their behavior. Neither one of them was. And then you take David. Boy, his descendants were sure not all exemplary. Some of them were just, you know, just terrible. But it was a blessing that God had given here to Abraham. That blessing would be fulfilled through thick and thin. Not depending on what his various descendants did. Those that cooperated with God, served God faithfully, they would enjoy spiritual blessings from God. But if they did not, they would not negate the promise that God had given. And so that's the case here. So God makes these promises to him. The threefold promise is made to Jacob. And when Jacob gets up, boy, he is really, really impressed. In fact, if you'll look in your chapter 28 there, he says, this dreadful place. This dreadful place. Now, we use dreadful as we have turned nearly every word like that into a negative. Awful. Dreadful. But the original import of awful would mean a place full of awe. Dreadful would be a place full of dread. See? So the word awesome would be a pretty good English translation. And which is yours? All right, the New American Standard uses that awesome. And that's still a pretty good English word. We'll probably keep on messing with it until we do it like we've done the rest and make it into a real bad word. But that's the meaning of it. He says, oh man, what an awesome place. Why, this is the gate to heaven. And I didn't know it. I didn't know it was. So he took that stone that he had used as his pillow and stood it up and poured oil on it to dedicate the place as a place of great significance. He says, this is the house of God. Now, of course, he didn't mean that it was a house with a building and roof and everything like that. But he meant a place where men could contact God, where he had contacted God. And so he renamed it from L-U-Z to B-E-T-H-E-L, Beth-El, which Beth means house, and the El is of God, the house of God, because he had made that. And God told him, I will be with you. And I will bring you back to this place, back to this land. So God assured him as he was leaving and going off here to who knows what, that he would bring him back. Now, that reminds me also that when Isaac sent him away, he said, I do not want you to get a wife from this area here. I don't want you to get a wife from the Canaanites. But you go back up to your mother's brother, Laban, and you marry of his daughters. And so that's where he's headed. Also, we have a note about Esau. We already know that Esau was married to two Hittite women. You know, earlier, remember that point had been made, and they were a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah. Well, when he sees and he hears what Isaac tells Jacob about not marrying one of these Canaanites and going up there and marrying one of the daughters of your mother's brother, then he says, oh, I'm going to get another wife. But this time he got a wife of Ishmael. And so in Esau's thinking, that would be okay. Well, actually, Ishmael's family was well on the way to being pagans themselves. So that did not materially improve his situation. But at least he did that thinking that that would be more suitable to his parents. So that was number three. Okay. Now, I want to just clarify one thing in my own mind. I've been teasing Sue that, you know, this would be a good time if I ask for a volunteer. She's always got her hand up there. If you want to ask something, Sue, raise the other hand. Okay? And otherwise, I'm going to just block that out. You know, I'm used to responding if I see a hand up there, and so I'm going to kind of block that out now and go on with it. All right, so God assures Jacob he's going to be with him. And Jacob, on the other hand, promises God. He said, if you will indeed provide my bread and my necessities and so on and bring me back to this place, then I will serve you, you will be my God, and I will give you a tithe of all. So this was the covenant. This was a covenant between Jacob and God, as there had been between Abraham and God and between Isaac and God. And now Jacob has entered into this covenant with God. So he then pressed on to the north. And now you see the map is a lot bigger, because we're going to have him proceeding from there about where Bethel was, approximately, up to Padan Aram. And sometimes you'll see that spelled with two D's in the Padan. And so you can call it Padan Aram or Padan Aram, just whatever you want to call it. Just make sure somebody else knows what it means. Don't get too wild with it. But Padan Aram, up there near Haran, and also where the city of Nahor was. So he proceeds up there, and he comes to the area where Laban lives, the general area, the fields and all that. He comes there, and he finds a well with a great stone over it. And there are some shepherds there, and they have their flocks. And so he goes up, and he says, in essence, how's it going? He comes up there and says, good day, brethren. Do you guys know Laban? Yeah, we know Laban. Is he well? Yes, he's well. In fact, his daughter is on her way here to water her sheep. And old Jacob looks off and he sees Rachel coming. And at that point, we don't know how far away she was. But he looks and sees her coming, and his interest is piqued. And so he says, look, it's still high. The sun is still high. Why don't you go ahead and water your sheep and go away? Yeah. Oh, no, we can't do that until they all get here, and then we'll roll the stone back and water them. And so here comes Rachel up. And so he goes over and removes the stone and waters the flock for Rachel. And, of course, Rachel, you know, she had never seen him before. And here she comes up, and there's this strange man that comes out and waters her flock for her and kisses her. But he tells her, I am the son of your aunt. Laban is my uncle. In other words, he explains his relationship to the family. Well, she was pretty excited herself and ran home to tell Dad. And so when Laban found out about it, he came and invited Jacob to come to his house. And remember that at this point, Jacob had his clothes and a staff. And that's basically what he had. This fabulously wealthy man, and didn't have a coin to his name, you might say. He was just poverty. So he gets up there and he stays around about a month. And Laban says, well, now listen, if you're going to stay here and work for me, I ought to pay you something. And so Jacob gives that some thought. And apparently it didn't take long. He said, well, how about letting me marry Rachel, your daughter? Well, I've got to let her marry somebody. Why not you? Wouldn't you call that a ringing endorsement? And so the plan was that he would work for 7 years. Jacob would work for 7 years for Rachel. Now, sometimes you read the text that says, and it seemed like only a few days. And if you read it one way, you're thinking, man, I don't see how you could say that. I don't see how you could feel that way. Because if it's the idea that when you're waiting for something that you want really bad, and it's 7 years, why it only seemed like a few days? No, that's not the point being made here. Because that would certainly be against human nature. But what it is saying is that Jacob did not consider it to be a bad bargain to give 7 years for this woman that he wanted. That's a pretty good compliment, isn't it? I don't know a whole lot of men that would be willing to give 7 years up front and work 7 years, huh? Oh, I know. Listen, does everybody remember what Jacob did to his father? How he deceived him? Well, we're going to find out that in the Bible, a lot of times somebody did that, and you at first think, well, they got away with that, didn't they? You just watch. I mean. So, he began to work for his father Laban, and he worked real hard. Now, the Bible also tells us that Rachel was very beautiful. The eyes of Leah were tender. Now, various translations put that different ways. And it's interesting to see commentators who put it different ways too. So they will talk about the tender look that Leah had. No, it's not talking about her tender look. It's talking about her eyes were not remarkable like Rachel's were. And so that took away her that beauty that Rachel had. Leah didn't have that. Now, exactly what the details were. Sandra, I can see that expression. What does your Bible say? Weak. So, see, people have said it's cross-eyed, that it was, and yet we don't know. We don't know. So, I would rather think that it means that perhaps in a culture where the eyes were generally very dark and flashing, her eyes were not. But other than that, you know, okay. Yes, Scott. Well, I'm not sure I would go that far with her, but anyway, she was not the one that he preferred. He preferred Rachel. So again, I can't say exactly what was wrong with her eyes. You know, it's like I was in this commentary that I'm writing. There are times I won't say stuff in it that my editors won't let me say. Like when we're talking about Bathsheba taking a bath, why, there are some that will tell what kind of bathtub it was. And I like to make points like that we have to be careful, you know, before we paint the picture here. I can't paint the picture. But I just know that whatever it was, that Jacob did not think that Leah was the one to have. Rachel was the one to have. Now, as we think about his life with Rachel after this, we're going to maybe have reason to say, was this the best choice? In fact, I don't think that either one of these women was exactly a spiritual prize. Okay? But, so the 7 years went by, and so it's time for him to receive his wife Rachel. So Laban held a feast. And so after the feast, he took Leah, they went to the tent. And then the Bible says in its terse way, and in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And in the morning, behold, it was Leah. So, of course, Leah had to be in on this, definitely. Now, to what extent Rachel was in on it, some say they had her hogtied. Well, I don't know whether they had her hogtied or what, but she was not there. And Leah was there. And that meant that Leah had to be kind of acting the part to convince him that she was Rachel. So, oh man, what in the world? He jumps up and runs to Laban and says, what have you done to me? You have swapped wives on me. And Laban said, now wait a minute. Around here, how many arguments have been made by around here? Around here, it is not the custom to marry off the older before the younger. What? The younger before the older. All right, it's not the custom around here to marry off the younger before the older. So we had to go ahead and let you have Leah, but I tell you what, you keep her a week by herself, and then I'll give you Rachel, if you'll work another 7 years. Well, he had Jacob over what is commonly called a barrel. And so he, well, okay. And when he had Leah, he also got her handmaid Zilpah. So, sure enough, he married Rachel also. And when he married Rachel, he got her handmaid Bilhah. But at first, these women were not, those two, Zilpah and Bilhah, were not his wives. Now then, you probably I'm going to let myself hope that you would like to be able to remember Leah and Rachel and Zilpah and Bilhah. So I'm going to give you the Waldron technique for remembering these two. All right, now here is Rachel. Now, I wouldn't tell this. In fact, I'll just mention that if Leah were in my class, their daughter is Leah. She's a little beauty. But I wouldn't use this argument if Leah were there. But it works for me. It works for me. Rachel, who was the beautiful one, she had the handmaid with the pretty name. Pretty woman had the pretty name. Leah, not the pretty woman, she had Zilpah.
Have you been inspired to name any of your offspring Bilhah?
No. No, I have not.
I haven't.
I have. In fact, I don't know any Bilhahs. Now, but that, you know, so many memory things, they're not really logical, but they work. So that's what. You know, remember, that'll work. But you need to remember all four of those names, because all four of them will ultimately act as Jacob's wives. And one of the things this does, this gives us one of the most intimate pictures of polygamy in the Bible. And it isn't pretty. It isn't pretty at all. So things get started off. Now, Leah made a choice. She made a choice when she decided to take part in that deception. And she shouldn't have done that, but yeah, Jacob shouldn't have deceived his father. And so here she deceived Jacob, but what she got was a great deal of unhappiness. You know, it's so often in the Bible, when you kind of use an underhanded trick to get what you want, so often it turns sour. And so here she starts out, and Rachel can't have a child. She's not having any children. And so Leah starts out having her children. So the first one she has is Reuben. By the way, are you all familiar with, all right, this would be, look in chapter 29 and start looking at verse 31 and 32, 29, 31 and 32 as it describes the children. Now look in your Bible as it tells you the names of these children and the meanings of the words. So let me just erase this for the time being. And so the first child comes along, a son called Reuben. Now, look in your information there and see what, does your Bible tell you what Reuben means? Look, a son. See? A son. So the Reu is the sea, and the Ben is a son. See? A son. Like, hey, Jacob, look at which wife is providing you with an heir. Reuben. All right, look now at the next one. Simeon. And see if your footnotes give you any help on that one. Now, of course, the text itself brings out the basic idea. What is the basic idea here? Hearing. The Lord has heard me. Now, let me tell you what to look for as you continue to observe these sons coming along. Look at how the names themselves are giving you an indication of the unhappiness and the frustration of Leah. Do you see that? Well, the third son is Levi. And what does it mean? Huh? Joined. Now my husband will be joined to me. You mean, not after Reuben? Not after Simeon? Okay, third son, Levi. Now my husband will be joined to me. That is, in his affections. And then the fourth one, Judah. And what about that one? Praise. I will praise the Lord. Okay. So she has these four sons pretty well in a row. And then she stops bearing. And she had borne those sons regularly enough that she could tell, uh-oh, there's something happened now. I'm not able to have another child yet. Well, meanwhile, this almost gets to be as the world turns, or something like that, all going on in here. Rachel says, I can't have a son. She's getting all of the scores. I know what. Here, Jacob, you take my handmaid, Bilhah, and you go into her, and I will have children by her. Now remember the deal with Abraham and Sarah and Hagar? That was done. But it wasn't done like this because, look, he already had, technically, do you see, he already had an heir. So this was not kosher. So the Lord blessed Bilhah. She had a son named Dan. And look at what Rachel said about him. The Lord hath judged me. In other words, he's decided that things are being unfair for me. And so he's given me this son sort of even the score. And then Bilhah had another one. And look at what she said about that one. With great what? With great wrestlings I have overcome my enemy, being my sister. So with mighty wrestlings, wow, you see? Now Leah says, well, two can play at this game, I'll have you know. So she takes hold of her husband and says, here, you take my handmaid, and you go into her, and I will have children by her. So he dutifully goes into that wife. And she begins to have some children. And so she has, Zilpah has one. And what does Leah say about it? Fortunate. Fortunate. Names him Gad, which means, guess what? Fortune, or fortunate. Asher, now God has made me what? Happy. By the way, that word, like in Psalm 1, blessed is the man that walketh not, Ashrei. Ashrei, blessed. That's the word, meaning happy, well off, blessed. Well, now then, let's see. Let's look at the score here. And unfortunately, that's really what it was amounting to. But now listen, do you see what was happening here in the larger scheme of things? What about the 12 tribes of Israel? Do you see that what we're coming up here with, what this is going to be ultimately? These men will be the heads of the tribes of Israel. The 12 tribes of Israel will descend from these men here. And these sons are coming along. Well, now, Leah, things get going again. So she has another son. Now, I think that's the right spelling. Usually I don't have the problem with the spelling, but that's two S's, right? Issachar. And then Zebulun. And that's all the sons for her. But then she also had a daughter, Dinah, who will play a fairly significant role in the history later on. Now let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. We're still lacking one, aren't we? Of course, I'm just playing. No. You know what name I mean, don't you? Rachel. All right, so here we have Rachel. Now, at long last, she has a son. and his name is Joseph. And she's very grateful to have that son, but you know what Joseph means? Look and see. May I have another one? The name Joseph is essentially, can I have another one? So, yes, Lord, thank you so much. I have a son. Give me another one. Add to me another son. So ultimately, she will have that other son, but not until they have moved back into the land of Canaan itself, and that's when Benjamin will be born. Now, when you consider the tribes of Israel, you can't get the 12 tribes just from these names right here, because the 12 tribes of Israel will involve two sons of Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh, who will inherit as tribes, so that both of them will inherit as if they were sons of Jacob rather than grandsons of Jacob. We'll mention that and help you to see that later on. But at this point, we can't quite get those the 12 tribes out of it, but we're building toward it. So that the way to do this is, remember, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. And that's the first four in almost any list that you use. In fact, in my mind, what I do is Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun. And then I tell myself, but Issachar, Zebulun, I'm going to have to wait a minute for them. So after the first four, then we're going to skip over, because remember, Rachel gets in on the act. Bilhah has Dan and Naphtali. Then Leah gets in on the act by sending him into Zilpah. We have Gad and Asher. And then we come back to Leah, who has Zebulun and Dinah, Issachar and Zebulun. And then we come to Rachel, who has Joseph. Now, anyone care to just repeat that? No, you have to work on it. You have to work on it. But you need to work on it. Instead of saying, now you might be one who says, well, I never can do that. Well, you may never can. But I believe that a whole lot more of you can if you set your mind to it. And will not tell yourself up front, I can't do this. Because there's a lot you can't do if you tell yourself, I can't do it. In fact, you almost can't do anything that you tell yourself you can't do. So we need to know these, because these are going to become the tribes, the names of the tribes. So there's more than one reason telling the history through here, but also knowing these tribes as the years go by. These will be the tribes of Israel. And so at this point, you see where everything is. And also, Jacob has really grown, and he's done well. But he's not rich, but he sure got a big family. But now he says to Laban, listen, I think I'd like to go back home. And Laban says, now wait a minute. Don't go back home. Tell me what we can do. Tell me what I can do. What can I pay you to stay here with me? And so Jacob says, all right, I won't take any money from you. But what I will do is, when the goats produce their multicolored goats, spotted and stuff like that, because usually the goats were black. The multicolored goats were rare. And usually the sheep were white. The black sheep were rare. So he says, I'll take the multicolored goats and I'll take the black sheep. So Laban went in and he gathered all the multicolored goats and all the black sheep and got them out 3 days' journey away, so that they would not breed any more of the kind that Jacob was supposed to get for his wages. So I am convinced, I know the story tells us, that basically what happened here was Laban was trying to cheat Jacob, and Jacob was trying to make sure he didn't get cheated. So they both went at it. So what Jacob did was, he took these saplings of various kinds of trees that have real white flesh beneath the bark. So he would cut strips, and sometimes he would just cut spots out, things like that. And he would take these And like the watering troughs are the places where they watered the flocks when they came together, he would lay them up there before them, because when they would come, that's when the rams and the ewes and the kids and the goats and the does and the bucks would be together, and that's when they would breed. So he would put those sticks up there so they would look at that, because the idea back then, up until at least the late 1800s, and possibly, depending on whom you ask, way into the 1900s, the idea was that whatever the animal sees at the time of breeding, that will influence the color of the offspring. Well, that was certainly the idea here. And so, not only did he do that, but he would wait, like it was commonly thought, and maybe a lot of basis to this, that an animal that was conceived in the spring and born in the fall would be a stronger animal than one conceived in the late fall and then born the next spring. Whether that's it or not, he would put these rods and everything up before the stronger animals, so that it would be the stronger animals that would breed the kind of animals he was getting, so that the stronger ones would be his and the weaker ones would be Laban's. Well, the fact is, just like all the other stuff Jacob had done to help God out, he didn't have to do all that. God was going to take care of him. And so in spite of the fact that Laban changed his wages, in fact, later on, Jacob said, 10 times you've changed my wages. In spite of that fact, he just kept on getting richer and richer. Whatever Laban said, okay, you can have the, maybe he would say, okay, you can have the white sheep and the black goats, and I'll take the multicolored ones. Well, then they all started bearing white sheep and black goats and everything. So whatever it was, man, Jacob just got so much richer. Well, finally, Jacob was aware that the attitude of Laban and his sons were not what they had been. The sons were saying, he's taking everything we've got. Why, it wasn't really that bad that he's taking everything we got, but the increase is all gone to Jacob. So Jacob has gotten very wealthy while Laban has not done any better. And so he heard them talking, and he knew that there, and he also could pick up on the attitude. Laban's attitude was not what it had been. And I think that Jacob pretty well knew that he was probably going to have some trouble when it came time for him to pick up and go back home. So he gave some thought to that. And so he called Rachel and Leah out in the field to talk with them. Be sure there was no run around the tents or anything that could carry word. So he said, now you all see that the attitude of your father is not what it has been toward me. And he had had a vision from God. God had appeared to him, telling him to go back. And so he said, and the Lord has spoken to me, and he has told me to go back. And so it is in my mind to go back. Now the reason why he did it like this was he knew that if Rachel and Leah said, well, Bud, we're not going back. You think we're going to leave Papa up here? You think we're going to leave him? You're crazy. Oh, see, he'd have been kind of strung up. So he had to run it by them, but they said, well, we don't have any inheritance left here. And they pretty well said, our father sold you to us. I mean, sold us to you. Our father sold us to you. And you've more than worked that out. You can tell that they weren't exactly happy over having been sold. I'm pretty certain none of you ladies would like to know that you were sold, right? I don't think you would like that. So they said, whatever you do, we're with you. We're ready to go with you. So Jacob chose his time carefully when Laban was away at the shearing the sheep and things like that. So he made his plans carefully. I mean, he had a lot of stuff. And the thing about it is, when a lot of your stuff, by this time, the overwhelming majority of stuff he had was livestock. When you're going to be moving livestock, you cannot run it at a gallop. You just can't do that with sheep and goats. You can't really do it with any livestock. And so, what was going to be the limit on how fast they could travel? How quick the herds and flocks could go. So, when he got everything together, they took off. And, you know, you remember the old expression from years ago, which I learned from Warren Glass? They took off like a herd of turtles pulling for the creek. So they were hurrying as fast as they could go, but it still wasn't near as fast as they would have liked. But they make a good bit of progress before Laban hears about it. I'm going to go ahead and stop the story right here, because I would like to take just a moment and review this over here. All right, now how many of you know Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah? Remember what I've always told you. When you raise your hand, I'm not going to say, would you stand up at your seat and repeat them? I'm not going to do that. I just want to know how many of you know those. Okay, all right, several of you do. All right. However many of you there are. 1, 2, 3, 4. Get one more good look. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. Okay, Jimmy, which one of those four can we erase? Well, I'm not going to do that. All right. Notice Reuben is erased. Now let's name those first four. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. Now make sure you do that. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. All right, Jim, which one you want?
Judah.
All right, we're going to do Judah now. See that? I like a little variety, so we're erasing the last one out there. All right, now, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. Let's do it again. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. Very good. Carl, we'll honor you by saying, since you're here tonight, you can pick one of them out to be erased. Just pick one. Simeon. All right, so here we have Simeon. All right, let's name them again. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. Now, as I always tell my kids, no choice now. So we do Levi. All right, let's do it. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. Now, does everybody have that? Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. Next class, it would be a really neat thing if I asked all of you to say those first four, wouldn't it? Yeah. So you can do it, and let's say those first four, and then we're going to gradually add the others. And if you can already do it, use your book, the book that we've given you, lists them and everything, and has the family tree in it. So you can use that to help you. But let's work on learning these, okay?